It would be by design, George. There's no way it would just be happening to me or my company. I would be thinking about how can I make them feel special? How can I make them feel like they're part of a team?
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Michael Grotchmo. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Michael. One, he's currently Director of Culture for CEO Global Network, a peer mentoring group for company leaders. He has also been a member of CEO Global Network for 14 years, so he's always used to working with a coach. Two, before selling the company Atlas Care, where he was president for about 12 years, he also wrote and produced a culture book several times. And I have one of my copies right here. And the third fact, during his teen years, he was a caregiver for his mother who had MS. Michael Grotchmo, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Oh, thanks so much, George. Well, that's a great introduction. I appreciate it and very happy to be here.
Delighted to be talking to you today. And let's explore this concept called culture, company culture. We know community culture and our ancestry culture, but now we've got this thing called company culture. Is this just a latest fad, or is there something real to it?
Yeah, no, it's a great question because I think people get confused regularly. And so when I'm talking on culture, this is like one of the first things, which is to try to clarify it. You know, everybody has a culture. Every household, every business, every community. And a culture is just really an agreed upon set of norms. And whether they're written or unwritten. And so my favorite example is always, if I'm hosting a meeting and people come 5-10 minutes late and I'm okay with it, then I have a culture of it's okay to be 5 or 10 minutes late. George, I know you've had John Wilson on this before. Come 5 or 10 minutes late to a meeting with John Wilson. You know, he has set a culture where if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late. And everything starts exactly on time. And so that's culture. Like that gets set actually from a culture perspective. And so, you know, that's an easy example, but like there's lots like that. You know, everything from how you dress, you know, within an office. Do you celebrate things or not celebrate things? What do you do with training? You know, do you have a culture of cultivating people and training them? Do you mentor? Do you do one-on-ones? Do you coach them? All of those are cultural. It's not fuzzy though, you know? And so it's a real thing. And the question now is, you know, for people, are they doing it? Are they thinking about it? Or is it just happening to them?
And so what I'm hearing, Michael, is so culture's there. Whether or not you intended, it is there. And so I guess the first question or exploration is, what is your culture? And it may start with, okay, we start meetings on time, or no, we always wait 5 minutes because everybody shows up late. And so those are little parts of the culture. And how do people dress? Do they and do we have a casual Friday? And do we have a in these times? Do we have well? You only have to come in the office 2 times a week if that becomes the culture. Or no, we want you in there 4 days a week. So these are the unwritten rules of how we work together as a team.
Very much so, and they extend out past that type of stuff. Like those are the very visual type things. You know, if you go to a company and they start the meeting late and everybody's okay with it, like it's normal, then you go, oh, that's just what they do around here. And other places, I've seen them walk the door. You're like, that's what they do around here. But it extends out. Like I ran a heating and air conditioning emergency service business, and you know, we had like the sunset rule, which was like we get back to every customer who tried to get a hold of us today. You know, so that's a cultural type thing. And when you onboard a new staff member, you let them know that. And then they observe it. So they see people doing it. And then it just, it becomes part of the cultural fabric of the organization. You know, we were like, we're an emergency service company. So, you know, people want us to get back to them and they're having a personal crisis. And so you have to treat it that way. That there's another cultural part, you know, do you care about, you know, like your empathy, language on the phone, or it doesn't matter. It's not my problem. It's theirs. I just work here. And so let's get something booked. Sorry, we didn't get back to you for 3 days. But that's also cultural. Like there's organizations that's totally fine. And so, you know, I do feel that if you think hard about culture, it shows up everywhere. Are we a planning organization? Do we do a strat plan? You know, do we follow the strat plan? Do we take it off the shelf? You know, what do we do here? And so, again, agreed upon, whether formally or informally, social norms. And, you know, when I say agreed upon, if you don't call it out, it just became agreed upon. And so there's lots of things happening in organizations where, I don't know, they just kind of do it that way. And they never think about it. I think of a speaker that I heard of on the sales side, Jack Daly, and he always talks about a life by design. And so I think of that. You want a culture by design. Like you're going to have a culture anyway. So why not take some time to sit back and say, you know, let's blue sky this for a second. What do I want it to be? And then where are we at today? And what's the size of the gap from where we're at today to where I want to be? And how do I close that gap? And, you know, it's not, it's no one person, because the culture is more than any individual. So, it extends out throughout the organization. And then you have to think about, why do you care? I guess that's the other part. You know, if it's like, we're going to get dressed up, it's like, why do you care? And if it's just that, well, I like to get dressed up, I don't know if that's a good reason. If it's, well, our clients are dressed up, we want to feel comfortable, or we do it for respect reasons. We want to sort of give them the level of respect they deserve. Or no, you know, this actually shows people that we care about our staff and that we're cool that they wear whatever they want, because that's what they want. And that's the kind of organization we run. But what you do within your organization says a lot to the world. And whether you realize it or not, I think we all spend time on our intended message, George, you know, I mean, your formal communication. And yet a lot of culture is informally communicated. So you're actually sending messages out to your staff, to your employees, your leadership team, your customers, suppliers, every day, whether you wrote them down or not. And so that's why I was so happy to be here on the intended message, because it's like, well, what message do you want to be giving? And you have to think about it in order to give the right message.
Michael, so I'm hearing that culture is how we operate within our organization. However, it sounds like the important aspect of culture is what message does it send to our clients, to our customers?
I don't know if it's any more important, because the message I'm sending internally is super important. I'm just making the indication that we're sending messages out, you know, and so it can impact all those things. And it's not just a foosball table and casual Friday and, you know, bringing beer to the office. You know, like that's one aspect of culture. But again, why are you doing it? To have fun, because we want to attract employees that want to have fun. You know, there's actual deeper meanings and reasons as to why people do all of these different things. And I think a lot of people don't think about it. Well, actually, I know a lot of people don't think about it, actually.
And Michael, so a leader of an organization, how do they get their mind around what the culture is in their organization right now and where they want to take it?
Well, first you have to identify all these cultural things. And so you have to kind of make a checklist, so to speak, of here's all the things that are important to us. And then how are our behaviors and actions supporting what's important to us? And so if we say, you know, development of employees is really important, then you write that down. You're like, so what are we doing to reinforce development of employees? And if it's like we do an annual performance review, you know, you can sort of go, maybe that's not enough. And so what is it? Anyway, so you can just sort of look at any aspect. If it could be looking at your customer service, you sort of say, okay, like, I wonder what our customer service looks like. You know, I always encourage people who run businesses to be a customer of their own business from time to time, because all the problems pop out. You know, when I ran an emergency service business, it's like call on the hottest day of the year and try to book a call. And you see what you get. And you know, and it's sort of a lot of times you don't want to see some of that stuff, but it's what your customers are seeing. So you need to see it. So you call in and maybe they yell at me. Maybe I get put on hold for 30 minutes and maybe nobody answers the phone and maybe they're rude to me. And so it's like, you know, I need to. You know, what do they always say? You have to inspect what you expect. And so you need to inspect your culture from time to time. Because as the boss, I think people show you what they think you want to see. And I'm not sure you're always getting the true look of where things are at. And so you just have to inspect it. But you have to go through a list of what are the things that are important to my organization. You know, for me, it was my people, like number one, right? So then it becomes, that's a big category. So now you start breaking down people and what is it about people? Is it developing of people? Is it friendly people, empathetic people? So, you know, you write down sort of the list of those types of values and adjectives. And then you say, well, now how are our behaviors and actions supporting what we want? And so I think there's a bit of a process, right? Where you first, here's where I am. Here's what I want. Let's look at the gap. And then you kind of get into it and start breaking it down into its elements. I always, you know, find all kinds of things, in my own business. You know, if I say that, we want to celebrate things and then you start going, well, what could we celebrate? And then you go, well, do we celebrate their birthday? Everybody on this planet gets one day of the year. That's all about them. I can't think of a better way to make somebody feel recognized and seen. And then we said, okay, so we want to do that. So then how do you do that? And my dad and I used to write handwritten birthday cards, you know, and even once we got over 100 people, like handwritten birthday cards and not just happy birthday, like handwritten birthday cards, like where you're thoughtful, because you go back to the culture and we're like, we want people to be seen and we want them to feel the love that we want them to be giving the love to our customers. And so how do you do that? And there's a series of ways. And we determined probably 10 years ago, birthday cards was one of those ways. Same with sending a handwritten card on a milestone anniversary. You know, once upon a time, that used to be 10 years. Now it's about one. But that's okay. Celebrate the 1 year that you've been together and do it in a meaningful way. And so there's all these things, but you just have to look at what are you doing? What could you do? And the other part is, you know, one of the reasons I've been a member of CEO Global Network for 14 years, I get to see what other businesses are doing and talk to them. And I'm like, hey, I'm trying to recognize my staff, or I want to develop them, or, you know, I want to create a culture of accountability or this. What tools and what do you do? And how do you communicate it? And how do you get that intended message across? And so, yeah, it's very helpful to sort of, and then learn from others, which is, some people said, we thought this would work. Yeah, that didn't work very well. And you're like, okay, like that's good to know. So I may, even though I want to do it, I might be aware that there are things that could happen that I don't intend.
Our people are important to us. Do you remember at one time, there were companies used to put on their mission statement or on a wall or something, or they make some a statement, our people are our greatest assets. And it would end there. That would it. That was it. They made this big statement, but they didn't prove it. And what I'm hearing you say in there is, now just something as simple and as easy as handwriting a birthday card, because how many handwritten birthday cards do we get now? I'm lucky if, you know, I get a text from my son, happy birthday, dad. and
AI generated, no doubt. No offense, George.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what's happening with that.
and I ignore all those birthday wishes that I get on Facebook. I don't even go to Facebook those 2 weeks around my birthday, because I just know there's a bunch of a phony birthday wishes, mostly from people I don't even know. But when you take the time and effort and actually think about a person to handwrite a birthday card, something as simple, that's the only handwritten birthday card they've gotten this year. Everything else was store-bought if they got some. And so that also meant that you need to think about that person. So you're putting mental and emotional energy into this person, which they've got to feel.
Well, especially too, because, you know, as the president, like most of them don't report to me, you know? And so the question is, well, how well do I know them all? And so it forces me to get out there, talk to their teammates, talk to their boss about it. You know, tell me about George. And they tell me that George likes to ride motorcycles. And I go, awesome. You know, and then it's like, you know, hope you get out for a ride on your birthday. You know, and so you can tie it together. But again, that was by design, because our culture was about being very personable. We were trying to make personal connections with customers. And so you need to make personal connections with your staff, because then they know what it looks like and what it sounds and feels like, which makes it easier for them to then go ahead and do it with your customers. And so for me, it's very purpose-driven. And it's not just, hey, we should, it's not just an idea to do this. You know, there's more thought to it than that. And that's not to say, though, that it's contrived. It's not contrived at all. It's just sort of, if you were to say, I want to have like the nicest staff, what do nice people do for each other? You know, like not more complicated than that, right? And it's like, a nice person would take time to recognize somebody. Great. And how would you recognize it? You do it in a personal way. Also great. And you just start going down that path, and I think it leads you to your answer. And it's not just to do it, though. It's not a task. You know, it does get on a task list, but it's not a task. You know, and so there's a bit of a separation there, because it is on a list, though. You know, because once you start doing it, the first person who doesn't get one, you know, you have other problems. So as part of it. And then the other thing is, then it leads to other things. So once we started writing cards, we went, I bet everybody who works here wants to know when it's someone's birthday. So then you put a birthday calendar out. So that way you're not the one guy here who didn't wish them happy birthday today. And you're like, well, I didn't know. I don't know everyone's birthday, you know? And so it's like, got it. The rest of us did, though. So now you're an outlier within the group. And so we don't want outliers in the group. We want everybody to be aware. And so it just leads to other things.
And what I hear there is how do we make sure that our culture is inclusive?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I used to joke that I ran a remote workforce before that term existed, because when you run a heating, air conditioning, and a plumbing business, most of the people aren't in your building. They are in their truck on the road. And so the question now is, well, how do you still make them feel included? How do you communicate with them? And so we were doing all kinds of things to make that happen, because they just weren't around us all the time. And so, you know, and we did different things for that group than we did for the people who were in the office every day. And no doubt with, you know, because I sold the business like a year into the pandemic, I'd have to rethink all of that now with, you know, now remote office work. What does that look like? But it would be by design, George. There's no way it would just be happening to me or my company. I would be thinking about, how can I make them feel special? How can I make them feel like they're part of a team? And I would be, you know, either coming up with events, sending stuff. But I mean, even as a cultural thing, like we used to have a Christmas party every year for all our staff and their partners. And there, obviously COVID hits and we can't do that. And it was the first time ever, like we, you know, 20 years, like hadn't done a Christmas party. And so I went out, bought Christmas cards. I sat with my wife, who helped me. She had much better handwriting than I did, but we sat together. We wrote out, you know, 100 Christmas cards, and then we gave everybody a gift certificate to go out for dinner and a gift certificate to the LCBO. And it was like, make sure you still go celebrate Christmas just because we're not together, and take time to get dressed up and, you know, go out, do that. Again, by design though, right? You know, there's no playbook for this. All of a sudden just, you can't do it. So what do I do? But you do something. I think it's meaningful. Like I think that stuff's meaningful, and I think we kind of overlook it. I think it gets overlooked because if you don't do it in a meaningful way, the action itself doesn't mean anything. And so we go, oh, we did that. You know, I think it's the handwritten note with it that makes it more than just, I mailed you a gift card and it was personalized. And it was like, so sorry, writing to myself, so sorry I don't get to see Sophia this year at the Christmas party. I hope she's doing well. That's different than just mailing a gift card and saying, hey, we did something.
Mm. Michael, when you produced the culture books at Atlas Care, how did this nurture affect your culture? What did it do for the company?
Yeah, that's a great question. So again, I didn't invent the culture book. Most good ideas are stolen. And I stole that from Tony Hsieh at Zappos. So probably 15 years ago, I visited where Zappos was in Henderson, Nevada, and I went for a tour. And they had this unbelievable culture. And then at the end of the tour, they gave me this book. I'm like, what's this? Like, this is our culture book. So this is the genesis of doing it. But then I really asked them, you know, why do you do it? And they're like, as we grow, it gets harder and harder to draw the line across all people as to what we stand for, why we exist. Some people don't get to meet other people in the organization. In particular, I think it's more important today because people, you know, whenever I meet people that I've only known on Zoom, a lot of times I'll go, okay, yeah, that's who that is because, I don't know them. And so I think it's really important. So it started out, went off topic there, Jordan, but it started out as a yearbook for staff. The early versions actually have an autograph pages at the back. And so when I first brought it out, and it was pretty simple, it was a lot smaller, and it had sort of reviews from customers, like, here's the great work we do. Quotes from our staff as to why do you work here and why do you continue to work here? And that's probably made up 90% of the book. And then the version you have, George, there's a lot more to it than that. It talks about charity work that we do because not everybody in an organization is either local or going to be involved in charity work, but you want to let people know we're doing it and we're proud of it. More importantly, talk about awards that staff get. You know, we hand out awards to staff. And again, not everybody can attend and not everybody's there. And so, you know, we want to recognize those staff again and memorialize it to some degree. The other part is that, I think workforce is a little bit more transient these days. And, you know, I'd had people come for interviews holding a culture book. And I'm like, where did you get that? And, you know, they got it from wherever, right? And it could have been a staff member, could have been a supplier, saw it in a dentist office. And they said, I was really intrigued. So I applied. And so I think you can do, it ended up having a life of its own, actually, as the book continued to grow. And then staff would tell me, here's what I'd like to see in it. I'd say, okay, that's great. And then, add that in there. And we had a culture of, and you have the book, George, but celebrating lots of things, right? So we'd celebrate birthdays and anniversaries and we'd celebrate holidays and, the work that we do. And for me also, the other part is that, it was a company, we're run by humans. And so humans make errors. And so it's easy to always, especially if you're focused on continuous improvement, it's easy every day to think that we mess up every day. You know, because we did somewhere, we didn't try to though. And the book was a little bit of a celebration as well of all the great work we did. And you read the reviews in the back and you see all the people that were included in the reviews. And it really gives you this collegial team sort of atmosphere where the company wasn't about Mike Groschmal and it wasn't about, Dick Thomas, who was there for 44 years. And it was about all of us. Because for the machine to work the way it's supposed to, everyone's got to play their part. A little bit like an orchestra, everybody can be playing great, but if one guy's squeaking, it doesn't sound great. And so the whole thing needs to sound well. And so you need to, we needed to take time to make sure that it sounded good. And we want to celebrate that. And so the book became a bit of a celebration and people were very excited when it got released internally. And then it sort of had a life of its own and got handed out everywhere.
Michael, in your current role as Director of Culture for CEO Global Network, it's not you who sets the culture. What is your purpose of your role? Because I'm guessing, again, it's always the CEO or president of the organization who determines the culture.
It's a great question, George. You always have great questions because you're good at getting to the right message. I always love our conversations. It's the CEO is one person who can set the culture. I think that everyone who works for an organization, though, can and should play a role in making the culture whatever it needs to be. And so, you know, what do I spend my time doing and how am I hopefully helping the culture within the group? I mean, if you go to the overall culture, you're right. That gets set by the CEO. But if you start making your way through the organization, every area can have a reinforcing culture and can have bright spots that sometimes bleed out into the other areas. Like, that's a great idea you guys are doing that. And so, you know, I look at, you know, CEO Global Network is a learning organization first. And so the question now becomes, how do we help each other with the learning? And so really trying to work hard at creating a culture where the group leaders help each other, because they all are wildly successful and talented individuals, but none of us know everything. And working with the members to make sure they get the most out of their membership and that they're connecting with other members. And so it's really about bringing the network together where, you know, we spend time together for functional reasons, like helping each other out, but we want to spend time together because it's fun to hang out together. And so how do you create that kind of an atmosphere? And, you know, it's a process, and it starts with the basics. The basics are, how do you make sure that every member is having a great experience? And so, and some of that isn't, like at the beginning, I said, foosball tables and beer. That's not what that is. That is a consistent delivery of services. That is making sure that every interaction is a great interaction. And so I'm sort of making my way through and helping all of that. And the other part is, how do you bring the right people into the network? Because that actually improves the experience for everybody. And so where do you find those individuals that can really be a difference maker to the experience of members?
Michael, CEO Global Network is an organization for company leaders. For those who might want to know more about CEO Global Network and if it's right for them, what are the qualities of a company leader that is best suited to CEO Global Network?
Thank you for that question, George. Somebody who loves to learn and wants to be better. I usually characterize it as the people I know in CEO Global Network are people that when they woke up this morning, they want to be better when they go to bed in a variety of ways. They want to be a better father, husband, partner, friend, son, daughter, boss, run a better company. So it's an all to be more charitable. And so they really have to have a learning mentality. And anybody who has a learning, move forward mentality, I think, who's leading an organization could be a great fit. I mean, the books behind me, George, almost all of them were referred to me by somebody within the network who said, oh, you should read this. This is really good. And I'm a lifelong learner. And I said, sure. And then I kind of got into reading books and collecting books. You know, that's the lifelong learning part. And it's about, you know, the kind of person who wants to help others. You know, is the other part. You know, one is I want to learn, but then we want people that want to help others. So if another member is having a challenge, you're willing to step up and say, yeah, like, let me listen intently and then give thoughtful feedback. But yeah, I mean, I think that anybody in those categories is a great candidate.
And if you're interested to know more, you can find the link to CEO Global Network in the description below. Michael, before we wrap up, if you could talk to a company leader who's trying to get their mind around this culture thing and be more, one, be more aware, and two, be more in control, if you can be in control of culture, what one, two, or three pieces of advice would you give them? Where do they start? Where do they start? And maybe it's something you've said already.
That's fine, George. Great question. It starts, I believe, with the individual and their leadership team. And it says, okay, you know, what are our cultural norms around here? And you can get a checklist, then for sure you could go online and find one that talks about cultural norms within organizations. I always start with the really easy stuff, like how we dress. Is that relatively well established or not? When we have meetings, do they start early, on time, or late? Do people come early to socialize with each other? Or are they running in from another meeting? Or are they, you know, 10, 15 minutes late? And that's okay because we're socializing, and whenever they show up, we'll then start. There's very visual cues some of the other things we talked about earlier, which got a little bit deeper, they take a little bit more time and thought, which is around the customer experience. What does that look like, sound like? How can you change it or impact it? That takes more thought. But you can even just start with just the really big things. You know, even stuff like, if I asked George to send me something, do I believe he would send it to me? And do I believe he'd send it to me today, tomorrow, the end of this week, next week, eventually? What is our communication protocol? You know, and are there expectations around it? So to your point about controlling things, I don't know, control is probably way too strong a word. I think you can heavily influence, though. I believe that you can write down, in a company, we are going to start a meeting on time. We are going to turn our cell phones off because we're going to be present and in the moment for the meeting. And we could all agree with that in the room. And that's the other part, I think, when it comes to culture, it's about getting agreement. Anyone who's taking facilitator training would say, like, do we all agree, hands up, we're going to start this meeting on time? And if everyone puts their hands up, you look around the room, we've all agreed to this. And so we're now all in a position to hold each other accountable to this idea. It's not about shoving it, though, it down people's throats. And we live in a world, I think, today where people want to know the why. 25 years ago, you could just say, do it. And they said, okay, I'm following orders. I'm a good soldier. And I would say that people are struggling to some degree with younger generation the big halo reason is just tell me why. And a lot of times we don't have a good why. So we say, just do it. And the answer is they won't. They actually want to know why. But if you give them the why, they will work every bit as hard and smarter than previous generations. They just got to know why they're doing it. And so if you don't know why, you can't tell them why. And if you can't tell them why, that's not what you're going to get. And so I really do believe that everything has to be purposeful as to why you're doing it. But if it is, the right people will say, well, that makes sense. That's why we're going to get dressed up, or that's why we're going to start on time, or that's why we're going to end on time, because they buy into the why. But if they don't buy into the why, I don't know how to put controls in place that we just make people do stuff. And I think we actually, a lot of time and effort is spent trying to, but it's really a fool's fallacy that, you know, you have to win people's hearts and minds. And the way to do that is to explain why you're doing things. I don't know if that helped, George, hopefully.
Extremely helpful. Yes. My guest today is Michael Grotchmel, reminding you that your culture is already there and it's an agreed set of norms.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.